Interview with Mr. A.N. Strong, 15-12-65. What is first?
What have I got? I can't read my own handwriting. Renaissance. Theosophists.
Oh, yes.
Well, they were just an esoteric body of about six people, a handful of schoolmaster types.
Oh, I see.
Their impact was absolutely unnoticeable.
Unnoticeable?
Yeah.
Did government take any notice?
Not the slightest.
No. Not the slightest.
And then the temperance movement, that was slightly different. There were similar types of people who were interested in, quite unselfishly.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, I don't think it had the slightest effect on the country's habits, because people just went on drinking with coconut farms next door. I mean, they didn't stop drinking because people said don't.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got local option, frankly, every village went dry because the bootleggers paid them five apiece for every vote, because the bootleggers didn't like wet areas. They made all their money out of the illicit stuff.
Yes, it. So
but the trouble was that there was a largely compounded of visionaries, rather, among the temperance people, far remote from the facts of life. You know, so good saying, don't drink. But for some reason, I'm sure of this, it came to be suspected of, well, you might vaguely call nationalism,
mm-hmm.
which was translated by government.
So government did suspect them?
Yeah.
Well, if I may say so, would you say that the government view was to consider them political mediums held under the cloak of temperance?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They were semi-subversive in the government's view. That was shown very much in the riots. Don Stevens, Anarcha, Don Barr and John Tivica, they both went to jail. Partly in their connection with the temperance.
With the temperance.
Yeah. It's quite wrong, of course.
Do you feel that government was unduly sensitive on nationalism and
some... In a panic. Of course they were sensitive. They hadn't a clue as to what was going on. Really. They handed over to the army the most fatal thing.
Yes.
There was nothing anti-government in the riots.
There was no... Yes. Could you comment further on the riots?
Yes, I'll come to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I will, I mean.
Oh, fine.
Politicians, you name some of them. Aaron Arsham, John Tillich, Senator H.L. Lemieux, Sir J.P., who's that? Sir James Beery.
James Beery.
Ramnathan, Currier de Silva, E.W. Burr, Currier. I know practically all of those. And My general impression is they were all, without exception, very honest and sincere people.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them are personal friends of mine, and still are. And I'm sure they appreciate the interest of their country, long ahead of any aggrandizement, personal. And they always worked strictly in the constitutional way. No attempt to demagogy, boiling up the message like Gandhi.
Mm-hmm. If I may say so, this is your personal view,
yeah.
But now in the civil service, you could say that there was the inner circle and the outer circle, if I may use the term, the secretariat circle and the outer circle.
Yeah.
What was the attitude of the secretariat circle to these people, insofar as you can generalize?
The same as mine, I suppose. I think the difference is rather exaggerated,
mm-hmm.
Because a man would only be 3 years in the secretariat, but
mm-hmm.
then he'd go back
to the,
my job. I'd go into his job. I was offered a job once in the secretariat, and I said I preferred to stay. I was so interested in the job I had.
Mm-hmm.
Need I come? And he said, no, you mean, if you don't want to. I probably lost a bit of promotion that way. Well, the possibility, I mean, because there was a distinct trend to look to the secretariat people for promotion to outside the Commons.
Yes, I see.
So that's nothing to do with it. I don't know. You can't have two different views about the complete integrity of Don Barr and John Tillich. He was a first-class gentleman, right from top to bottom, and so was D.S. Senaker. And he was very popular with all of us. We served under him, as well as after the self-government, when they got ministers. And I enjoyed working under his lands.
Mm-hmm.
When I was GA in the Eastern Province, I had a lot to do with agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
I was first class.
And You may be interested to know that Mr. Stace has written some of his reminiscences.
Yes, I read them.
Oh, you read them? Yeah. Oh, fine.
He said
what do you think of this point which he has made with regard to the whole British community? He says one of the failings was arrogance. Would you agree with him?
I didn't agree with him, no. Arrogance on our part.
He's taking the whole community, he's including the unofficials.
Arrogance towards the native population, you mean?
Not so much towards the village, because it really didn't arise, but to the educated middle class, I think.
I think it's just a personal view of Stace. I never had any... I can't think of... no, I don't agree with that. As far as my own impressions go.
Mm-hmm. Take a man like Clifford.
Yeah.
Why was he unpopular with the politicians?
I don't know. I was his private secretary for some time, a man I worshipped.
He was very hard-working, I know.
He got the ablest brain I've ever come across, and my respect for him grew into complete affection.
When were you private secretary?
Just before he went to Malaya.
Oh.
27.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't he suffering from intermittent insanity?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he shouldn't have been allowed to go to Malaya.
Yes.
I was with him all that time, and I was the last person to say goodbye to him. He insisted on my going on board with him after.
Was he an authoritarian type?
Sorry?
Authoritarian.
No.
Mm. Is of course the point is that. These politicians wouldn't have come into contact with him the way that you did.
Oh, mine was only a short interval. I don't think he was unpopular in the sense that...
He referred to the Correas as a little core of rot.
Well, the Correas were being very naughty about that time.
Oh.
Yes, they were very... Well, I say naughty. I can't describe it any. They were asking for trouble, really.
They were going to...
Is this on all the time?
Yes, you want to know?
No, I was only wondering.
What about the incidents when planters chucked people out of first-class carriages?
That
sort of thing.
I can only remember one case of that. There must have been others, but it wasn't common.
It wasn't
coming. No, not at all. Mm-hmm. The only one I remember was not a planter at all. He was a Deputy Inspector General of Police, a chap called Forrest, who died later.
Uh-huh. Well, he was involved in the riots.
He threw a British priest out of a first-class carriage, which he wanted. And D'Souza, who had already been in jail as the editor of the Daily News, criminal liar.
No, morning leader.
Morning leader, yes.
Armand D'Souza, yes.
He got 6 months for libel.
Who?
The editor.
Why, what did he say?
He said that this policeman was running about like a berserker. Spitting and so on. Spitting about his... Very, very rude at the moment. I think he wouldn't have been even fined, I don't think. But for his past? His past, he'd been in several libel actions.
What sort of man was he?
I never met him. A rather low class.
Was he demagogic?
Yes.
Uh-huh. What about the other paper, the one run by Vijay Vardhan? What did you think of the Daily News?
First class. Uh-huh. Pulagalli was a man I liked very much. He was the editor a long time. You know him?
Uh-huh. That was later on, yes.
Yeah. They had a certain anti-government approach. Well, of course everybody had that. I'm quite certain of this impression, it is correct, that they didn't dislike us, mm-hmm. that's to say, the British.
Mm-hmm.
What they disliked was the fact that they were the rulers and they won.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a natural.
Perfectly natural. They said things. Well, I mean, friends of mine were speaking in Parliament. Would use the most frightful language, vituperative language against the civil service. And I'd meet the chap later on in the evening and say, you gave us a bit of promise to try. I think in our constituents, you see, we've got to
And was this sort of thing resented by the civil servants?
Hmm?
Did the civil servants resent these attacks?
No. Mm-hmm. They knew what was behind it. Mm-hmm. And if you were junior, you were blanketed and cushioned against all that by the fact that you were in a sort of office boy. And
well, I noticed that Mr. Myers didn't like it, and he resigned because of that, you see. Well, it's one of the facts.
Oh, I don't... I'm speaking quite generally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One didn't like it, of course, but I mean, if you thought about it, you realised that it was natural enough, and it wasn't malicious.
Apart from these attacks in the council, did you find political interference in say, the 1920s? Did politicians go above your head to the colonial secretary?
Not in the 20s, no. A bit 30? Later. 24.
Uh-huh.
That's
yes.
When it started. I suffered badly from that. I was district officer in AGA Martyr.
Oh, I see. Who was the person now?
The member there was Forrester Obasekara.
Uh-huh. And what did he do?
He came down to the district and told me how to work and what to do. He went round the villages. He could hardly speak English.
Uh-huh.
He couldn't address a meeting. He carried an interpreter with him.
Oh, I see.
He'd been brought up in England.
And you couldn't get on with him?
How could you? He insulted me right, left and centre. He went around the village and said, don't take any notice of the AGA. I'm now in charge. Mm-hmm. If you want anything, come to me. Well, of course, he got into a mess through promising things which he couldn't fulfil, and the villagers were clever enough to see through that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a considerable interference with him, and he on two occasions I remember particularly, he got the government to upset an order of mine.
Oh, I see. Was this why Sir Mark Murkiston Fletcher was unpopular?
That's why he was unpopular. He didn't support us.
Mm-hmm.
He and Elphinstone, the Attorney General, mm-hmm. were working in Harmony, both double-crossing. Fletcher was a completely dishonest rogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I have found a unanimous opinion on this point.
Yeah.
Why were they doing this? I mean...
We asked another chap, and I met Elphinstone, who had just done the supposed dirty trick with Fletcher's aid, or all the other way about, and he said, well, why do you do this? He said, well, you see, in Colombo here, we find that by... feeding the politician, we get
quiet
talk. I scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. At our expense, you see.
Uh-huh.
So my friend said, "Was we?" He said, "Oh yes." We find that they'll eat out your hand if you give way on this and that.
Uh-huh.
So Wesley said, "Yes. If you ever tried, you give a horse a handful of oats, he'll eat it. If you ever tried giving him a handful of rusty nails."
Who was the principal assistant to the Colsec then?
Oh, I think it was Mark Young.
Uh-huh.
Certainly part of the time.
He would have been in a rather difficult position.
Mark Young was one of the most royal people I've ever... If you said a word about Fletcher, he jumped down your throat.
Uh-huh.
Not that you had one tried it, because he wouldn't listen to a word. What his private thoughts were quite different, possibly. Uh-huh.
Yes, I see.
I know in one case de Glanville was called in. He was just forming the electrical department, and Fletcher gave him a line to go on, which he followed, and then got into trouble. And Fletcher denied having said what he said.
Uh-huh.
On a later occasion he was called in. He went into Mark Young and said, he said, yes, he's ready to see you. Just go in. And the other said, will you come with me? He said, no, why? I want a witness. How dare you go back? A witness. Curious. So de Glanville told me that he wasn't going to be let down the second time. When he finished the interview, he went back to his office and he wrote out Colsec. As an aide memoir, I'm writing down the result of our conversation. Do you agree? I mean, is this... resume, correct. He got no answer, so there was no question then that he would ever could go back on it. Well, that's the way we looked at him. He did me two very dirty tricks. He got me censured by the governor.
For what?
And the governor had never seen a paper.
This is the system of just signing.
I'm directed by Isaac. Nobody could censor you except the governor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm directed by Isaac and to inform her that he's taking very displeased with your tactlessness and that sort of thing. This was for annoying somebody whose letter of apology was in my other pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Fletcher never asked me for any explanation.
He just...
On their letter, he gave me this censure.
And how do you know that the governor never saw it?
Because I'm coming to that. These people then had a second thought and said, wait a minute, we're wrong. We've mistaken Mr. Strong. And they wrote to the Secretariat and said, please cancel our letter. Sent a copy of that to me with a humble apology. We were very sorry, with a couple of hot heads, you know. And we've withdrawn the letter and we're apologizing to you. I said, that's all right, I can get it. Meantime, I got the censure. So when a suitable opportunity came, I went to Fletcher and said, he said, yes, of course, you deserved it. I said, I don't want to argue about the merits of the case. Would you please destroy the evidence of this? It's done its job. Because I've known of cases where somebody had got a copy of a letter and produced it 4 years later, mm-hmm. to the detriment of the man, you see. And what happened to Lucette's boss?
Campbell.
Mm-hmm. Happened to him. They were going to send him to America. Somebody got up 5 years later and said, here, 5 years ago he was censored. That's the type of man you're going to spend all this money on. So he advised me not to lie down under it. So I asked Fletcher if he merely destroyed the letter, his copy of it. And he said, no. I said, well, it's just sheer nonsense. I've got an apology for doing what you're censoring me for doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, may I see those letters? I said, certainly not. I told you I'd got them. I demean myself by producing proof of my statement. I said, I'd like to see the governor. Well, you can't do that. The governor's never refused an interview with anybody in the civil service, personally.
Who was this?
Clifford.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh. He gave in. He said, no, you can. I'll fix it. So he sent me the file, secretary of file, and gave me permission to tear up anything I wanted.
This is Clifford?
No.
Clifford, oh, right. Fletcher.
If I'd gone to Clifford, I think Fletcher got the sack.
Mm-hmm.
For taking the governor's name in vain. And he...
Yes, I see.
Fletcher wouldn't even trust me to believe that he'd torn the thing up himself. He sent it to me. Of course, his secretary, his officials in the secretary, was livid with rage. The idea of a secretary's file going out to be destroyed. They couldn't.
Oh, yes, you did mention the fact... earlier on in your preface to Boer's memoirs, that earlier on you had suffered because government had destroyed some correspondence.
No, Newnham may have mentioned that.
Oh.
Either
you or him, in one of the prefaces.
He got rather mixed up between not destroying papers, but going relying on the absence of papers to...
Oh, I see.
What happened was...
You can't rely on verbal...
It wasn't Fletcher.
Mm-hmm.
It was before his time.
Before, yes.
When I was in the customs, the government asked my chief
mm-hmm.
whether he could spare me to do a part-time job in the food control.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, without my knowledge, he said no. He's fully occupied with my work, with his own work.
Mm-hmm.
But if he'd like to take on the job as overtime, Sundays, Saturdays, mm-hmm. mornings, evenings, I have no objection, provided he's paid overtime or something. And government agreed. Then Freddie sent for me and said, here you are. Do you want it? Well, I was a young married man and I money would come in very handy. I said, yes. So I worked away for 3 or 4 months. And my new chief, I went to him and I said, well, what about this pay? He said, well, what do you want? And I said, well, I worked it out on the basis of the customs overtime, which is a good example, you see. And I think 150 a month. He said, oh, no, no, make it 300. You need to record this.
Yes, well, no, it's all right.
And he said, no, make it 300, it's plenty of money. I said, no, I don't want all that. So he said, well, I'll sign anything you like. And he signed it so many months, 150 a month. I sent it to the secretary, it turned down. No, we're not paying any more fees. I went round with this letter. I said, well, right, man. I came here on that condition. If I'd put in this damn thing after my first week, I would presume we'd be paid. Now, And then they said, have you anything in writing?
Oh, I see.
I stood up and said, no, I'm sorry, I thought I was dealing with gentlemen. Upon which I was promptly thrown out to the secretary. I never got it. Until my chief came back from leave, sent for me one day and said, I hear they pay you no fees. I said, no, sir. It was agreed. I saw governor, I saw the governor about it. It was agreed. And then he said, all right, I got you into the mess. Well, the only way I can get you out of it. He wrote me a cheque for 2,000 fees. Out of his own pocket. Let's put it back on the table now. I'm sorry, sir, I can't accept that, but I shall never forget this gesture.
No, I was wondering whether government was ever capable of destroying embarrassing correspondence?
Yes, incapable of any dishonest. Fletcher particularly.
Mm-hmm. It just depended on who was in charge. Mm. But could the colonial secretary do that without asking the governor?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The thing that old colonial secretary wanted to do was never to give the governor any work he could possibly avoid doing. Mm-hmm. Anything required life.
Regarding this, in fact, Mr. Newnham has made a very relevant point. He said that Ceylon was a senior crown colony.
Yes.
And the governor had reached his peak and therefore wanted things quiet.
Quite right. Hmm.
And the colonial secretary, in order to get promotion, wanted things quiet.
Perfectly correct, yeah.
So you think this had a very serious bearing on policy?
I wouldn't know how far it affected policy.
No, I mean, they wouldn't go to great deal of trouble to try something new for the sake of improving things.
No, on the contrary. I put up many, many cases where I got no help at all. Told about my own business.
What is this? Certain improvements?
Yes.
And they just told you to?
Well, I started this land for the landers. Mm-hmm. By accident.
When was this?
1927.
Matara?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think this is rather important. I'd like to make a point of it.
Yes.
As illustrating my point, you weren't encouraged. On the contrary, you were damped down. I saw an encroachment on the roadside. Mm-hmm. Our survey found this chap who had a hut there, mm-hmm. miles away in the jungle, up in Aparesco or somewhere, I don't recall. And half an acre, fully planted up with jackfruit and jack tree and God knows what he'd. Made a very nice little job of it, not realizing that he was encroaching on the road reservation or something like that. Uh-huh. Well, in the normal course of events, I settled it on him for 5 rupees. Nominal.
Yes.
Well, while there was an interval for the preparation of the conveyance, the man wrote to me and said, would I please make out the title deeds in the name of somebody else? Kengani. I said, no, I'll look into this. So next time I was on circuit, I asked him what had happened. His Kengani, he was the PWD coolie, had said, I want it.
The Kengani wanted it? The
Kengani wanted this land, freehold. Well, I don't want to sell. All right, you're sacked.
Oh, I see.
And you'll never get another job, except by moving bodily into some new town or something like that. I'm not going to have this. Which is called exploitation by their own people.
Yes, I see.
Which went on a great deal.
The middleman.
Yeah. I thought, no, I'll lease it. You can't sell a lease. You can sell your crops or mortgage there, but you can't mortgage the freehold. Sell it. And so I wrote to the control of revenue, when office disappeared, and asked if I could give him a lease for 99 years. Oh, no, there's no regulation about that, and they wouldn't help.
Simply officious?
Yeah. So I did it myself. I altered a yearly ticket of occupancy, all of that in red ink. I got it printed at my own expense. And I went on doing that. And that put me on to, I spent a year or more on settling any bit of crown land I could find on these long leases. Well, that came to the regular scheme, landless villages sort of thing. Then I went even further. The middle class, instead of advertising a sale by auction, where any planter could outbid any villager, or not a villager, say a retired chief clerk,
yes,
a man who wanted to buy 20 acres or something, Well, they could always knock him out. He had no chance. This scheme of mine was a middle-class thing where the acreage sold would be limited and the means of the bidder would be... he'd have to have no other land.
Uh-huh.
And of course, if he got found out, he could be thrown out.
Yes, but how did you find out whether he had no other land? His father might have lots of land.
Well, you had to inquire, mm-hmm. and there was always a threat that if it ever came, and this chap's enemies would soon let one know,
mm-hmm.
that the whole thing would be cancelled, and it was a lease anyhow, long mm-hmm. lease, you see. Well, of course, I got a lot of credit for that from Senanaka years later, but, I mean, that's how it started. All I got was a censure, but in front of the committee, land committee, who asked me by what right I had to commit government to these long leases.
Mm-hmm. Who passed the censure? Censure?
The committee.
Who was the chairman?
Elphinstone, the Attorney General, mm-hmm. residing. And the people who saved my lives were, well, Senanaka won.
Later on, or then?
At the time, at the meeting. Uh-huh. Yeah, how do you know government would honour your commitment? You know, no business, you know. I said, well, I couldn't conceive that any government would be so dishonest as to dishonour a commitment of that sort. You know. And then suddenly, he was the old buffalo, as we used to call him, John Stephen Serenaka. He said, I think Mr. Strong, jolly good job to work. Should have been not long ago.
Yes, this is an excellent scheme. Do you know if any other AGAs were trying this out?
No.
Oh. That's the point, you see.
It was copied later.
By Brain?
Yeah. But Brain first just refused having to do it. Brain was controller of revenue. When I went and asked for some means of a long lease, he just wouldn't take any interest. He said it wasn't in the regulations. Of course it wasn't. If it had been, I wouldn't have written.
Yes. I see. It's very funny that he should refuse it first and later.
Yes, he of all people, because he was a paddy bank chap who started a lot of things, turned out to be some of them wildcat schemes.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, he got that urge, you see. And see, he did a lot of good.
Reverting to this earlier point, you feel that the Secretariat was rather obstructionist on these sort of things?
Yes. I was another case in point. I was district judge. Right. Well, I got case after case. What's the next case? Crown Proctor appearing, an indictment from the lower court, non-summary, committal to the district court, concealing six coconuts.
Yes.
Well, obviously the man was a reconvicted criminal, otherwise he'd have been dealt with in the lower court.
Mm-hmm.
But when he had seven or eight previous convictions, it became non-summary I suppose this is nonsense. The whole essence of the thing is to keep the knowledge away from the judge. Well, I'm faced with the immediate knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I used to say, oh, we've got a reconvicted criminal I see here. That helps me to form my views, doesn't it? And the sort of thing. Well, I eventually wrote and suggested the adoption of the English method, whereby the lower court finds a man guilty or discharges him. And then you're told, before you sentence him, he's had eight previous convictions. Send him to court sessions for sentence only.
Yes, I see.
I was then told my man business. If the Attorney General wishes any advice from a layman, he'll ask for it. Until then, you keep your mouth shut. About 4 years later, they introduced it without acknowledgement to me.
Oh, I see.
That's the type of thing you've got. Uh-huh. And it's stifled any initiative.
Yes. That's very interesting. And Mr. Newnham has made the point that many of the secretariat people were what he calls secretariat wallahs, essay writers.
Yes, that's right. Yes, true. Well, Blood, I remember, when he was there as a junior, mm-hmm. I think he was fourth assistant, he spent months, weeks, on writing a complete reconstruction of all the regulations regarding the issue of passports. Well, that was a Foreign Office matter,
mm-hmm.
really. It had nothing to do with the local.
Yes, I see.
So when he turned it up to the chief secretary, he was told to get on with a bit of work and to stop writing essays.
Who was the chief secretary? It speaks well for him.
I think Fred Bowes, I think, was acting.
Acting.
At the time.
Would you say that, taking overall British policy, in the sense of ultimate ideals, there was no purpose or drive.
I never knew of any government policy on any subject. I never had a circular, barring the ordinary procedural circulars and what you do in certain cases about this and that. I never saw any case. I never knew what government policy was on land. It didn't seem to be any. On land,
that's very important. That's a basic problem.
Well, look at my own experience. I mean, here are these people, land grabbers generally,
mm-hmm.
who might be anything from a rich Colombo firm to an out-of-work proctor. There didn't seem to be any drive or policy. I don't know, Newman's got more information than I have about that. It's a great experience. But I think he'd agree with me.
Oh yes, he definitely. He made the point himself.
Did he?
Yeah. Yes. And he says it was just drift.
Drift, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And
if you pull the thing up, unless it was sticking out mild or something, it had to be done or else,
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't touch it. New, more work, you see.
They
were hard working enough.
Yes, I agreed.
Yeah.
And they had certain good qualities, integrity, responsibility.
Yes.
But one has a feeling that they sought efficiency as an end in itself, you know, as an object in itself. You think so?
I'm sorry.
One has a feeling that they sought efficiency, running along the fixed lines efficiently, as an end in itself.
Yes, yes. That's right.
Though,
of course, there was a type of person in the secretariat who had been in the district, I mean, seen him,
yes.
Who, knowing that 10 years ago he was in your job, mm-hmm. he would tell you how to do it.
How to do it?
Well, I just wouldn't take that.
Mm-hmm.
And these chaps were not very popular. In the old days, you hear many old seniors talking, in the good old days, when you'd write up some quite big sort of scheme,
mm-hmm.
And the chief secretary would write back and say, yes, go ahead, I think this is fine. Paragraph 2, you will of course have formed your views and considering the following points, A, B, C, D, E, F.
That is consideration, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Of course the chap hadn't, perhaps, on all cases. But he would be, you have of course considered it. All you do is to write back and say yes, after you've done so, but you hadn't thought of that perhaps. That was advice, really. During the war, I had a man who was suddenly taken sick. He'd had 7 years of army leave. He was an engineer in the army. And he was condemned to death. His chap going to die in about a month. Was something which required a serious operation, I think. So I put in for his leave, got a passage for him within a fortnight, and no answer. So I happened to go into the secretary one day and saw Collins. I said, well, what about this chap's leave? He said, well, we don't think that you can spare him. I said, my God, what are you talking about? Don't think I've said these duties can be arranged for. Well, you're telling me that I can't spare him. Who knows whether I can spare him or not? Better than I.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I've got to spare him, because if he doesn't go home, he's got to go to hospital tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And whether he comes out alive is anybody's guess. And I'm not going to be spoken to like that. You come and do my buddy job. Let me have yours, if you know.
Was Collins an officious type?
He's a curious. He got a bad streak of vindictiveness, in spite of the fact that he was a pillar of the Baptist Church or something like that. He could be very, very spiteful.
Well, you are the second person who had mentioned it. Mr. Davidson mentioned it with regard to his attitude to E.H. Davies.
That's one of the cases I was thinking of. I rescued Davies from that by accident, because he was working under me at the time, and he was passed over for promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And the man who was promoted was Sudbury, who for 25 years had been a constant source of trouble to government, physically, because of a war wound in the head, and he sometimes had sort
Sudbury.
Of blackout. Mm-hmm. It all happened over this. Davis had had a complete breakdown, sent home on leave, recovered. On his way out, he was torpedoed. And when he came back, worse than when he started. So they sent him to a fairly nice job, softest job, in Euralia, AGA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was there for nearly a year, I mean, like half a year or so, and improved immensely, out of the doctor's hands. Mm-hmm. Then they suddenly told him he'd got to go to Matra. So he went to Collins and asked if he could stay, say, another 6 months in Kandy. He answered, well, and Collins said no. So Davis appealed to the governor. The governor had never approved Collins' move, which was wrong, of course, but the governor's always...
And mind you, that Collins was only deputy chief secretary. Oh, he was chief secretary, but...
He was deputy.
Deputy.
Yeah. He had taken two.
Two jumps.
Yeah. So the governor let him stay. Well, then the time came for promotion to grade one, and Collins turned him down on the ground that he was not fit to serve in any part of the island. No medical board. Mm-hmm. Just that he refused to go to Malta, more or less. And then Davis brought the whole thing to me. Well, then I was going on sick leave. I'd been out 6.5 years, just at the very end of the war, in the March. And I recommended that Davis should act for me, my 6 months' leave. Mm-hmm. He was my deputy then. The new governor, Moore, mm-hmm. an old friend of mine from the early day,
mm-hmm.
sent for me. I said, good morning, sir. He said, no, sir, here, John, sit down. You put the government in a hell of a hole. I said, how? He said, we just told the Secretary of State that this man's unfit to go into Great Britain, and you, the most important job in the island at the moment, the howler, have recommended that he should take over. You wouldn't change your view. I said, not a bloody hope I wouldn't. So, he said, well, I quite agree with that. I mean, I couldn't turn down your recommendation. You acted responsibly. You wouldn't have recommended a man in whom you hadn't the greatest confidence. I said, quite so. I had lots to do with Davis. Fully competent, more so than myself, I'm quite certain. Right. I then went to see the secretary, the court sec, and they mentioned this. And they didn't understand what it was all about. So I told them, frankly, what the facts were about Collins. They were terrified.
Who was this? The secretary?
Gent, I think. Mm-hmm. Permanent undersecretary or deputy undersecretary. And Davis got promoted.
Yes. I read Collins's book, and it strikes me as very pedestrian, just on public administration.
I didn't know he'd written one.
Fairly early. And
he got a bit megalomaniac later. And he'd override any consideration, didn't fit him with his views.
He was dogmatic, was he? Rigid?
No, he was too much affected by his personal... Well, for instance, Davis. Mm-hmm. That was purely personal, because Davis had appealed over his head. Mm-hmm. And the governor supported Davis. Then Davis was out.
Yes. What's the next on the list?
Constitutional right now. I'm not qualified to speak on constitutional.
No, but I was interested in your views, that's all.
Just my own personal views.
Yes.
First of all, I think it's shown up very much in Rhodesia. Mm-hmm. This sociological war cry, one man, one vote, is not fitted for any country that I know anything about. See, everywhere you go, you'll find the tradition has always been either monarchical or tribal.
Uh-huh.
Loyalty to the chief,
uh-huh.
Monarch or maybe tribe, and in Africa, of course, Ceylon's always been monarchical. And
uh-huh.
It's one man, one vote. It's just sheer nonsense.
Uh-huh.
But when this last government, Cotalaba's government, was thrown out by Bandar Naik, I got a letter from an old comrade of mine, appearing in the customs. Honoured sir, you see, what uh-huh. Now, at last, we've got rid of this tyrannical government, for the new government is going to reduce the price of rice and sugar. That was our idea. There's nothing in that than the party political platforms about nationalisation. I never knew the Sinhalese were nationalisation.
Pardon?
I didn't know the Sinhalese were for nationalisation.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to these chaps, I know certain people, my friends, and my religious. What's that mean? Well, you see, we're not going to have any more Europeans in the services.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, as long as we keep the governor and the secretary and the AGAs and the GAs, we'll be all right. No, I said, my own driver said to me, We don't want a black government. Of course, as you know, black's the last word in the ultimate word in the insult.
Yes.
The nationalisation of land. Well, all the land's going to belong to the people. Well, questions already? Meant nothing to me at all. Mm-hmm. Not even what it was acquired like.
Yes, that was most of the people. But wouldn't you say that the historical progress of various countries has invariably been the work of a small minority?
Maybe, yes. But what I'm trying to get at the moment is the one man, one vote, where Wilson, Harold Wilson at home here, he says there's going to be very strict qualifications before a man can vote. For instance, he's got to sign his own name. He's got to be able to know the name of the candidate. And he's got to have an annual income of at least £10 a year. These very strict qualifications. People who semi-barbarous in many cases. Quite uneducated. My own idea to be constructive is a sort of electoral college.
Pakistani system?
I don't know about Pakistan, but it does exist.
In 1910, I think this would have been before your time, but there was this famous, there was this start of the constitutional process when the educated middle class, including Sir James Pearce, asked for wider representation and wider powers.
Yeah.
They didn't ask for universal franchise.
No.
But Clifford wrote this dispatch, MacKellar was governor, but Clifford wrote it as colonial secretary. And they argued that the middle class didn't represent the people, which was has considerable truth in it, and that the people were very content with British rule, which is debatable. I mean, it's difficult. Would you say that people were very content with British rule?
Yes, I think so.
Wasn't it a question of sheer apathy?
The villager.
Villager.
Yes, oh, quite.
Wasn't it apathy rather than content?
Contentment might have bred apathy, and what they look
could
for
be the other way around.
Well, I think not. Personally, I saw no sign of it. They all came to me, or to us, to help them out of their troubles. And
would you say that the headman and the AGAs and GAs represented the villager better than the middle class?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Undoubtedly. Well, I think you suggested, or I've suggested myself, what was I doing in Ceylon? Did I realise that I was training my successor?
Yeah, did you?
No, not at all. Hoistler asked me that, and I thought, oh, I come half my time was taken out with protecting the villager from the exploitation, not of an alien government, but of his own people, land-grabbing proctors, the misuse of the partition ordinance, where the man lost his land through the fact that he had to sell it in order to pay his legal costs.
Legal costs?
Yes. Well, you got the man coming in from outside. He wants it. He buys a little patch, 160th part of some. Then he encroaches on his neighbour's land, the original owner, and he forces him to sell, otherwise they get the sack or not be employed or something like that, and so on. Or he takes advantage of the partition ordinance, and by the time he's got about 360 co-defendants, it takes about 2 years, some of them died and some die in the meantime, the legal costs go on. And the man has lost his land. He's now working as a coolie on what was his grandfather's land.
Yes, I see.
That happened daily. In fact, I felt responsible for a murder. The man came into the Matra district from Panadura. Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I noticed was that in my monthly returns from the village presidents, the Guns of Bahalas, was a tremendous outbreak of coconut theft. 20 times a day or a week, you know. Everybody's gone mad here. Everybody's stealing coconuts. So I inquired on circuit, and this newcomer who was running in all the villages round about his little piece of land, an acre or two, and they were in fact stealing their own coconuts. But his method was to accuse them of stealing his. Mm-hmm. It's really a civil land dispute in a way. And so I sent for this fellow. In the meantime, I made some inquiries about him and the police, and I spoke to him. Fortunately, but nobody listening. I said, "Look here, let me give you a word of advice. your brother died in unfortunate circumstances. He said, yes, he had an accident. Yes, I said, the accident was 40 knife wounds. How do you know? No, no. I said, oh, yes, yes. It's happened in, I mentioned the name of the place. Oh, well, yes. I said, now, you're heading in the same direction. These villagers, I know them quite well. They'll take a lot. There's a limit. I know what you're doing. Either you stop it, or else one day you won't wake up. No, he said, no, wasn't interested. About a fortnight later, Kenneman, the town proctor, who has a bit of land in the neighbourhood, said to me, just been up for the weekend there, he said, do you hear about that murder? Well, they haven't once a day, nor. Well, which one? He said, oh, that man. They had done that. They got, fortunately, I hadn't said that in anybody's presence, otherwise I might well have been accused of an excessive before the fact. Yeah. Practice suggesting that's what they should do. We got about 40.
Yes.
I never really heard anything about no village.
You would